Hey, it's John. I want to share with you a little bit about Chuck Norris's morning kick. I started taking it every morning when I get up and I feel great. It's a new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. It tastes good and gives me the energy I need to start the day, both physically and mentally. It also gives me that initial boost I need without the sugar crash that orange juice gives me. Many of us don't eat enough green vegetables, and this is a good way to remedy that. I know I've noticed a difference, and maybe you will too. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris today. All right, we're live on the Conversations That Matter podcast, and I appreciate everyone's patience in advance because I've been getting messages from StreamYard for the last hour telling me that they're having a lot of people on the platform, and so they might have some problems with delays and that kind of thing. So Lord willing, this will all work out. If not, I'll upload the conversation later because it's also being recorded locally. But we have two guests with us today, neither of whom have been on the podcast before. We have Ben Zeisloft and we have AJ Hurley. How you guys doing?
Very good. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, my pleasure. So I've been in chat groups with Ben for more than a year, I would say at least. And we've kind of gotten to know each other in that. And it was, I think it might've been since the Daily Wire and all that. So
I think that was pretty much it, yeah.
Yeah, AJ, I know I've started talking to you more recently, but I have heard of the White Rose Resistance and excited to hear what you're gonna bring to this. Let me just explain to everyone kind of what we're doing and why you guys are, because I've had some people reach out and say, like, do a debate series on this and get my guy in. And there's a reason that it's you guys. And the main one is because you guys respect each other. And if this is a tense topic, but you can both be adults about it and there's already a rapport built. And I just think that makes for the best discussions on these things when you respect each other, but you're still unapologetic about the positions you hold. So Ben, both of you, I should say, but I'll start with Ben, has really a platform and an expertise to bring to this. So Ben, I know you've kind of been around the block in political activism. You, like I mentioned before, you're at the Daily Wire, but now you are the lead editor at the Republic Sentinel. Where can people find about your work or website or whatever?
Yep. So our site is republicsentinel.com. On Twitter, we're at RepubSentinel. And then I'm on Twitter as at Ben Zeisloft.
Perfect. All right. And then AJ, I know yours is pretty long. You sent me your bio.
No, you don't have to. You can just do the bullet points, man. All good.
So you were instrumental in exposing something that happened in DC at the beginning, actually about a year ago now, where there was some baby. Yep. 2 years. Okay. Sorry. 2 years ago where there were some babies kind of like left in a box and you exposed this, and you've been a respiratory care practitioner and worked with different pro-life groups like National Director of Activism at Live Action and Survivors of the Abortion Holocaust. And now you're at White Rose Resistance. So, so you've been around the block on this issue and you both have clear views on what we're going to talk about today. And I'll just say this and then I'll let you guys talk. Some have said, this is a debate. I think actually you guys, Ben, I know has already promoted this as a debate. So I'm like, well, I guess it's a debate now, but there's no debate format here. So I asked the guys when this started developing into more of a debate, do you want to do like rebuttals and opening statements and that kind of thing? And they were cool with just keeping things kind of fluid. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to let them both talk. And then if we reach a point in the discussion where questions would be appropriate, I may ask some questions. If we have questions from the audience, I may put those in there, but I'm going to try to be as fair and equal as I can. So if I give Ben a question that's hard, I'm going to try to find a hard question that's equally hard to give to AJ. So that's how we want to do it this evening. And I view the podcast as like, this is my house, your guests in my house. So I want you to feel that way. And I want everyone else who's participating to feel that way. So here's the big question first. who wants to go first, or does it matter to you guys?
I'm good either way.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I can go first if you'd like. It doesn't well, usually who talks first is the one who doesn't want to, you know, usually people don't want to talk first in these type of things, because if he talks first, usually loses. But I mean, I can go.
Well, you're going to go back and forth. So yeah, I mean, this is sort of like an opening statement, but just your position. And usually the person who goes first in a formal debate, right, would be the one who's supporting the view. And then the person who disagrees mm-hmm. would be the person who goes next, usually. So the view, as I understand it, this is what we agreed on, was whether or not approaches to ending abortion that are incremental are morally acceptable. That's as I understand mm-hmm. it. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And I know Ben disagrees with this. AJ thinks that that's permissible. So I think AJ, probably you should go first to okay. explain why you think that's a permissible thing. And then we'll let Ben mm-hmm. respond and we can go back and forth. Sound good?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, all right. I think it's helpful to start with basically just, and I'm getting a little bit of an echo, John, too. I don't know what that's all about, but I think it's a little, it's very helpful for me to just right out the gate kind of established what biblical incrementalism, or whatever you want to call it, righteous arguing or voting for righteous increments to end a political evil, what it is and what it isn't. So, you know, when I say I'm not an abolitionist, it's funny because different people have different perspectives of what that even means. Like, and it was funny because I texted some friends that aren't even germane to this whole thing, but they kind of know the gist from the periphery on these, and asked them, hey, how would you define, are you an abolitionist? And then they said yes, and I said, what is that? And one of them said, well, that means that you don't believe in rape and incest exceptions. And another one said that, well, that just means that you want to criminalize abortion. And so I think a lot of people get really confused because they don't know all the insider baseball when it comes to these topics, because if that was the case, I would be an abolitionist as well. And I used to be an abolitionist for the first few years until some of the wheels started coming off for me. So let me just say what I don't believe before I say what I do. Just maybe we can cut some unnecessary conversation out, because I don't want to argue for, I don't want to defend the pro-life movement. I don't want to defend people that think that we should forever regulate this issue. I don't want to defend people that want to victimize women. I want to end this political evil, and I want to save as many children as I can while I'm doing it. And so I would like to end this with, I don't necessarily think this will end without a great awakening or a revival of some sort, or at least restoring of the family unit. But regardless, I would like to curtail evil as much as possible. So I believe abortion should be criminalized. I believe that murder, if you willfully, I held the babies of third trimester baby. I mean, if you are the guy who is dismembering that, or you're the person who is responsible for the death of that child, you need to be held to the fullest extent of the law. So I think rapists and murderers deserve the death penalty according to God's standard, right? It's going to take a long time till we all recognize the beauty and dignity of every single human being to where our laws reflect that. I do think that there are examples of biblical incrementalism. And I also think that, that it's not, to saying that we are for some type or against killing all some babies does not mean that we are for killing all babies. So, and when it comes to like a heartbeat pill or something, depending on the, some heartbeat pills, I would outright reject giving the circumstances. Others, if like it's in New York and California or some place that, that is unbelievably hard and they're killing most children. And even, I mean, California is a destination spot killing 20, 30, 40, 50,000 late term abortion. Now it's like, if I could get that, I would save a lot of life. And so I don't believe that, saying I believe in protecting babies with heartbeats means I'm sanctioning the killing of babies without heartbeats. And so, I think that all of those analogies would apply there in terms of saving. We need to save all the lives we can, and while preaching the gospel while we do it. So that's essentially my perspective. Real quick too, my perspective is not that incrementalism is unjust, but that it's inevitable. And I actually, where the wheels came off for me with the whole abolition thing was when I started realizing that equal protection does not equal biblical justice. If the punishment, if I get a life at conception bill and the punishment that's a result of that is, you know, a 50-cent fine, that might be equal protection, but it's not biblical justice. And so if a heartbeat bill is indirectly sanctioning the children, the death of children without heartbeats, then an equal protection bill is indirectly sanctioning putting image bearers of God in a 7-foot cage for 20 years to life. And something that God would never prescribe as just either. So it's not that biblical, that's not that incrementalism is unjust. It's that it's inevitable. You just need to determine which type of incrementalism you want to biblically enshrine in methodologies of such. So that's essentially my perspective.
All right. Awesome. So, Ben, what do you want to say? You can respond to some of that if you want, but maybe just make the case for your position first.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, sorry if I framed it as purely a debate. I know it was supposed to be a discussion. I was using the term debate loosely, but in essence, I agree with AJ that increments in some sense are inevitable, but I think you said at the end there that incrementalism is inevitable, which is what I would disagree with. I would say the incrementalism, the way I'm defining that term, is explicitly pursuing change by degrees, which I think is not something that God wants us to do as Christians, because inevitably what you do is you codify iniquity. So some of those, you know, pro-life bills he was mentioning, I haven't read many heartbeat bills, but I was just doing some research into Mike Johnson's history of pro-life activism. And one of the bills that he had was the Unborn Child Protection Act when he was a member of the Louisiana House. And that bill does explicitly say, you know, just because we're banning, you know, late term abortions with when you get to go in and cut up the baby, it's not to say that, you know, and then there's a list of other methods you can still do to kill a baby. So it depends on the kind of increment you're pursuing. You know, I would concur that, yes, increments are inevitable, but incrementalism is not inevitable. Immediatism is something you can actually do to truly move the ball down the field and pursue justice. And I think that's what God would call us to do. You know, he does say establish justice. Like, there are actual biblical commands for how we go about this. So one thing I would like AJ to do at some point tonight, if he's willing, is to kind of show us why, you know, his approach is not violating, you know, Psalm 94, Isaiah 10, these explicit passages where we're told, do not codify iniquity, you know, do not, you know, prescribe death by decree for the fatherless. So I lined out today on Twitter a handful of other arguments, but we have to consider also the prudential failures of incrementalism over the past 50 years, because that's the way we've gone about it for a long time now. Post Roe is teaching the culture that the way we should end abortion, and teaching Christians the way we should end abortion, is by increment. So I think we can examine the fruit there. But what we've had after 50 plus years of pro-lifeism in the United States is a culture that is extremely confused on what is human life. It's only got more degenerate even in other spheres. You know, what is a woman? We don't know the answer to that question. But on the abortion issue, You know, when I do sidewalk counseling here in Philadelphia, when I talk to women, you know, they'll use the pro-life excuses. They'll say, well, my baby doesn't have a heartbeat yet. My baby is just 6 weeks old, whatever the case may be. And they're picking that up from pro-life laws, where if Christians have been, you know, the whole pro-life rights or anti-abortion rights have been saying, no, we're not murdering babies at all from the very beginning, we wouldn't be in a situation like that. The battle lines would be a lot more clear. And I think AJ recognizes that's where he wants to be. But I think he said earlier today as well that, forgive me if I'm wrong, it's essentially that he wants to abolish abortion, but he's okay in the meantime with regulating abortion. And that's where I think the heart of the disagreement lies, where I would say, let's not regulate abortion. Let's actually establish equal justice in the process. Trying to think if I missed any points, but maybe a helpful synonym for incrementalism is regulationism. I heard that T. Russell Hunter said that recently. I think it's a good distinction because obviously we can't go about and just say, you know, here's the book of Deuteronomy. Let's enshrine this into our laws, right? Because that would entail entire wholesale restructuring of the legal system, of the criminal justice system, the way that we, you know, adjudicate murder and homicide, which I think everybody recognizes that's not what we're trying to do. The question is, are these increments sins against God? And I don't think in the abolitionist case, that is what's happening.
Cool.
All right. Well, yours was shorter. So I'm trying to keep track of this. So you have like, you have 2.5 minutes if you want it, Ben. So, well, do you want AJ to respond now or do you want to keep talking? It's up to you.
That's fine with me. Yeah, he can respond.
All right.
Yeah. So, much I agree with there. First thing you talked about the, I think the Unborn Infants Protection Act, I think that was a really bad thing for a few reasons, because one, they admitted outright that it was just something that they could kind of grandstand that they passed, but it wouldn't really save any lives. And so, I think we should be very careful as to what type of message we're sending. Especially if it's not going to result in the net positive of saving people's lives. This understanding of teaching by increment, I do think there is some perspective there, because I do believe that the law is a tutor. However, I think my response would be like, if there was in Nazi Germany, if there was 10 Jews that were lined up about to get gunned down by the Germans, if they said to me, should we save 5 of them? In that regard, it would be kind of disingenuous for somebody to say to me, oh, well, if you save 5 of them, then you're teaching them that it's okay to kill some of them. And especially with these things in regards to unjust weights and measures, I think we'll get to that. Like in that circumstance, if they had said, oh, well, should we save the ones that that aren't Jewish? I don't think it would be pretty disingenuous if I said, oh, well, that would be unjust weights and measures. So I know you shouldn't. So I think we're left with this inevitability in an unjust system where, like, look, all of these, we live in a system where everybody, all unborn children are up for grabs. So like in California, you can kill them to the day of birth. So if I was to get a heartbeat bill passed, it would be so disingenuous for me to make the argument that I'm actually sanctioning the death of children without heartbeats. No, actually the abortion industry is doing that. The people that have written laws, that's already taking place. My law is just simply saving some that I can, based on whether it's politically feasible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with the I'm glad you mentioned political feasibility, because I think that's one of the issues at hand, where we're convinced that only certain increments or certain measures in this discussion are actually politically feasible, where really what the Christian should be doing in politics, and this gets into the conversation we were all having a month or two ago with Trump and how do we respond to Trump, is buying into the paradigm that you know, there's these set outcomes in politics, and we have to pick, you know, between the lesser of the two evils, where really the way that political engagement works, it's all about power. What you do is you exert as much power as you possibly can to change the outcome, right? We're saying, mm-hmm. you know, you need to support this bill. We need to identify the legislators that are on the fence about, you know, my abolition bill, whatever the case may be, and say, if you don't support this bill, I'm going to, you know, direct funds, you know, get boots on the ground to knock doors in your district and make sure you don't get reelected next year. So I don't like the mindset of buying into a false paradigm and saying that we must have incrementalism or else, you know, we will get nothing. I don't think that's true. And I think we actually, when we buy into that paradigm, we ensure that that's the best we can ever get is incremental measures. And I think that's why over the past 50 years, we've had legal abortion where some states have kind of increments. And right now, a lot of the states are passing 15-week bills, which actually allow 94% of abortions beforehand anyway. So they're pretty much ineffective because even those that last 6% could just have the abortion you know, beforehand and just adjust their behavior. And I bring up a similar concern with the Harvey bill, even considering that, you know, most of those Harvey bills have exemptions for the mother, which I know that you're opposed to and so forth. It's important to reframe our thinking on this matter to, you know, from like, oh, what is feasible? Because, you know, that may be a broader sample set that we can think to actually, how do we change the outcome of this? How do we, you know, preach righteousness, both, you know, preaching the gospel, but also calling for repentance, which in the civil context looks like establishing justice.
Well, let me take it out of the feasibility, you know, the abstract, and actually give you an example. And I'm so glad that you mentioned the 94% and the 15-week bills, because what I'm trying to illustrate is this isn't nebulous. This isn't some theory that I'm bringing up, that these distinctions actually matter, and they're actually that if you get this wrong, if you don't try to save the actual babies that you can, then what's going to happen is you will actually allow for more bloodshed. And let me give you an example. I'm glad you said 94% of the children are killed before 15 weeks. So 15-week bills do absolutely nothing. I completely, well, little to nothing. I completely agree there, but it's the abolitionist position that allowed for a 15-week bill to happen in Arizona just 2 weeks ago or a week ago, not even a week or a week or two ago. Let me explain what happened. There was an 1864 bill that was already on the books. And this bill said, basically criminalized abortion for the abortion provider. But the gist of it was that it wasn't a crime for the mother. And the AHA and the abolitionist groups lobbied with the Democrats to basically say, don't repeal this or repeal this bill because it creates unjust weights and measures. And now, as a result of the Democrats siding with AHA and the abolitionists, the bill got repealed, and now 94% of the babies are being killed in Arizona, if that stat is correct there. So this isn't arbitrary. This isn't abstract. These ideas have consequences. And in this particular, this political ideology has victims.
Yeah. I don't know if that's quite accurate. The abolitionists I saw who were opposing the 1864 bill, first of all, for the record, I was just saying, you know, leave that bill intact, leave it alone. If anything, somebody should just amend it and make an equal protection bill and then pass that instead. But that's all. I didn't see any abolitionists necessarily saying, you know, repeal that bill. Yes, you know, go ahead and repeal that bill anyway. Maybe you have counterexamples, but
I do. If I could speak to that real quick. Well, I mean, Jeff Durbin got utterly destroyed for supporting it. I mean, the AHA groups and Abolitionist Rising were completely coming after him publicly for trying to support retaining that bill and not removing it and putting an equal protection bill in. And I mean, in that regard, it's like, I guess we could get out of the abstract and I could ask you why it would be okay in that circumstance to vote for, if you could vote for that, right? Rather than just leave it alone, why would that be okay if it's sanctioning unjust weights and measures, but and not just outright unjust in something that we should and incorrectly preaching to the masses and telling them that if you kill a certain class of humans kills an unborn child, then that's not a crime.
Yeah. I mean, I was not the one, nor were any abolitionists or anyone really, any pro-lifers either, because it was in 1864. Nobody put that law on the books. At least I can say what I was saying publicly. You know, I was writing about this and quoting, you know, Jeff Durbin and Abortion Now and Red State Reform and the groups that are on the ground, you know, fighting to keep that bill intact, but also for equal protection. I was quoting them saying that, you know, leave that bill alone and let's just do equal protection. We introduced a bill 3 years ago, you know, in 2021 in Arizona that the pro-life establishment killed. Then, by the way, they went on to take away the penalty, the adjacent penalty in the 1864 territorial law that did penalize the woman, because we used to have those on the books in the United States. And it was the pro-life movement that actually took those away in Arizona. That's at least what I was saying. I mean, maybe it's a bit inconsistent, but, you know, yeah. I would say, you know, that does, just because I'm inconsistent or, you know, on that point doesn't mean that, you know, incrementalism is correct. So, you know,
well, sure. But that's my perspective. My perspective is unjust incrementalism is inevitable. So if your bill is we can never establish anything other than biblical justice. We need to establish justice for our preborn neighbors. Well, why wouldn't you resist that bill? Because clearly it doesn't establish justice. So I actually, in a sense, I appreciate the other side, the abolitionists, the hardcore abolitionists on this perspective, because at least they're being consistent. At least they're saying we want to establish biblical justice. This bill doesn't, therefore it's not worthy of our support.
Can I jump in real quick?
Go ahead, John.
I apologize. I just need to explain to everyone. I keep looking down. So AJ, do you still hear the echoing?
I do, but it's tolerable. Don't worry. It's just,
okay. Cause I was hearing it too. And that's why I was muting you, Ben. I was trying to anticipate when you were going to talk and stuff. Okay. So I'll keep doing that to monitor things. I'll also put myself in the middle here since you guys are the ones disagreeing here. Do you mind if I ask a clarifying question to both of you that I feel like might tease this out a little bit? So, this is the impression I'm getting so far in this debate over the Arizona law and so forth, is that I think, Ben, you're looking at, and maybe I shouldn't say that law, because I don't know if you think this about that law, but heartbeat bills and incremental arrangements that aren't perfect biblical justice and that kind of thing. You look at those things, it seems like, as affirming standards. Like if you vote for these things, you are affirming that, you know, like this should be the standard. And I think AJ, correct me if I'm wrong, either of you, it looks like you're looking at these as restrictive standards. So I'm voting for this as a restriction. I know this isn't the standard, but this is a restriction. So I'm not voting to kill people on Sunday through Wednesday. I'm voting to save them on Wednesday through Sunday, right? So I think that might be a different way you're looking at the same thing. Like AJ's looking at it as a restrictive thing and Ben's looking at it as an affirming thing. So I don't know if that clarifies it. I thought it might. So either one of you, I think, Ben, you were up next. Does that clarify the issue? Is that how you're looking at it?
Yeah, to an extent. And really one of the reasons why I'm holding the standard is because I actually read these bills frequently for what I do for work, you know, when I'm reporting on these things. And it's just like, these don't do anything. Like these laws are, these regulations can be easily worked around. And if you're really determined enough to kill your baby, you can skirt it. I mean, I'm writing a book right now all about this topic where, you know, I tear apart all the, you know, pro-life bills that have been proposed in the place of abolition bills over the past 10, 15 years in, you know, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Arizona, all these states where there have been these big abolition battles. And that's what you are doing when you vote for one of these bills, is you are affirming, you know, it is okay to kill a baby, you know, before this point, but not after this point, or whatever the case may be. So that's what I'm having a problem with. And, you know, there are explicit biblical commands to not do that sort of thing, to codify iniquity. And I'm reading the bill. And I'm like, yeah, there's the codify iniquity section in, like, you know, section 3A or whatever the case may be.
Okay. So that's standard across the board on pro-life, what you're calling pro-life legislation, like heartbeat bills and that kind of thing.
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah.
Okay. So AJ, what do you think of my characterization
well,
there?
Well, no, you're, I mean, I would put it in simpler form. I would just say that, protecting a child, okay, I'll just give a very simple, like, that if you vote for a heartbeat pill in certain circumstances, obviously there's wisdom that needs to be go into that decision. In certain circumstances, voting for a heartbeat bill does not equal sanctioning the death of babies without heartbeats. That's what kind of rare I would like to get, but I did also want to address what Ben just said too. So I'll let
sure, you. Yeah, go for it.
Well, you know, you had said one of the reasons why you didn't support these was because they don't do anything. I mean, I can go into the practical aspects of whether these bills do anything, but that's beside the point, I think, and not to the crux of the issue here. Because if they did do something, would you support them? Because I hear a principle. And back to the debate topic at hand, the debate topic was, is it morally permissible to not necessarily do they do anything? Because most of these heartbeat bills, I wouldn't support either, right? It's a very, actually, when Ben and I really agree when it comes to the practicality of a lot of this stuff, like, we're not very far off. Like I know Ben enough to just by kind of looking at him from afar that we, when it comes down to the brass tacks of whether we would actually vote for some of this stuff, we probably agree in 99% of the cases. But that's a different thing than why I'm here is I am very careful about binding people's consciences towards one type of political way of ending evil.
Yeah, I certainly understand that. And, you know, when trying to drill down on that, there are actual biblical commands that guide how we do this, right? Where, you know, I don't think I would reject the notion that, you know, politics is all prudential or all compromise. I say there actually are, you know, standards that God does have for believers in politics. And I am convinced, you know, I'm reading through Isaiah right now and constantly there's these calls for biblical justice, protecting the fatherless, all these sorts of things. But then also, like I'm saying, you know, explicit prohibitions saying, you know, you do not pass bills that God hates, essentially.
Sure.
You know, because then you cannot expect his blessing as a result of that. So I'm not trying to bind consciences. You know, I think there is legitimate, you know, disagreement and so forth. That's why we're having discussions like this, right? Where we're allowed to disagree as brothers and sisters in Christ on this. Yeah. But, you know, I do think there is a extent to which it becomes sin, and then, you know, and also not prudential. I mean, we're supposed to be wise as serpents, innocent as doves. Mm-hmm. And really what a lot of these bills are doing is allowing, you know, the politicians, you know, the pro-life Republican politicians and lobbyists to, you know, pull fast ones on believers where they take their money and they say, you know, give me this money, I'll pass this, like, equal, you know, this Born Alive Protection Act. Or, you know, I've seen bills that say, you know, you have to give the baby a proper burial once they die. It's like, are you kidding me? Would we ever pass this bill if it were like in the case of serial killers? You know, you can serial kill all you want, but then you have to properly bury the victim. You know, it just makes me mad even talking about it, right? And it should make all of us angry that our lawmakers are this weak and this inept. And I think a lot of it is because, you know, we're buying into these false narratives saying we must have these, you know, incrementalist measures. And I think you asked a question where you said, you know, if it did do anything, would you support it? And I would just reject that premise because I don't think they do anything. I haven't seen an example of, you know, a bill like you're talking about that does actually meaningfully save preborn lives. You know, and even setting aside, you know, if we have a 6-week standard, you know, maybe it'll save some practically. And, you know, I'm not denying the fact that, you know, if Texas or Florida or something has a 6-week bill, that some babies will be saved and some moms will say, all right, I'm not going to do this. But you know, I don't think that actually meaningfully happens to a provable degree, because still, you know, there's the abortion pills, you can cross state lines, you know, there's self-managed abortion, there's all sorts of ways. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, oh no, I was agreeing with you. Like, totally agree. Like, no, we need to close these loopholes, man, and we need to have serious laws in place against abortion trafficking and trafficking I think states that can do it and criminalize abortion and actually make it a crime, we need to do that. I don't know if I heard a specific answer though, like in terms of like if a heartbeat bill actually did save 99%, 0.9% of the babies, would you vote for it?
Yeah. Well, I still reject that premise just because I don't think they saved 99.9% of babies.
No, I know I'm intentionally giving you a hypothetical to determine like where your standards are. Like, is the issue the wording? Is the issue the amount of, is the practicality of it, or is the issue just the principle?
Yeah. I mean, again, I'll repeat, you know, I've been looking at these bills for a few years now. I haven't been around the block as long as you in this orbit, but you know, I've never seen a bill that actually does something like that. In terms of the principle, I mean, yeah, I would oppose it because it's codifying iniquity. I don't think God blesses that sort of thing.
Can I ask a clarifying question? This isn't meant to be challenging. I'm just aware of the people who are listening, and some of them might be surprised to hear this because they're thinking, hey, I live in a state where Planned Parenthood doesn't even exist anymore. They all got pushed out.
Right.
Wasn't what just happened with the ending of Roe, wasn't that, you know, years and decades of pro-life or anti-abortion movement kind of seeing the fruit of its labors, and now you're saying that, you know, none of this really means anything. I don't know if that's what you're saying, but maybe just a point of clarification.
Yeah, I can go first on that. I think AJ and I would probably agree on a lot of this, the answer to this question, where, you know, Roe was, you know, the overturn of Roe was good, but Dobbs was bad, where Dobbs allows states to just make up their own abortion laws and decide who lives and dies. An actual just ruling from the Supreme Court would have been, you know, we have the 14th Amendment, let's protect all preborn life and guarantee the equal protection of the laws to all citizens, including the preborn ones. So in my reporting, I've been looking at these stats constantly. You know, we're up to, I think, 73% of abortions in the United States now happen via pill. Here in Eastern Pennsylvania, we just had a Planned Parenthood close, right? This is, you know, this is a purple state. It's not just in red states that they're starting to close clinics, but here in Eastern Pennsylvania, they close a Planned Parenthood because they're just doing pills now, right? So it's, I think maybe something that a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, just because of Planned Parenthood, you know, down in Dallas, Texas, or in Fort Worth, or, you know, some other red area closed, it doesn't mean that abortion is over. It's just happening. You know, the abortion clinic has moved from the clinic, the physical clinic, to, you know, the dorm room or the to deal with. And that's, I would contend, the reality that none of our laws actually do deal with and why we need abolition.
Well, yeah, no one is denying we don't need abolition, right? Definitely not anybody on this platform here, but it seems kind of weird to me, and I don't know. I know you don't mean to be disingenuous, but it feels a little disingenuous when the abolitionists have been constantly, including yourself, calling things like heartbeat bills iniquitous and calling it sin, and calling it evil, and then saying you don't do anything. And then if I pose a hypothetical that if they did do and say, hey, is it because do you oppose them because they don't do anything or because they are in principle evil? I didn't really get an answer to the question. And so I would like to know if they actually did save 99.9% of lives, if you would support them, not just because I'm trying to put you in a corner, but just because like, it seems more than fair that if you're going to call me evil for supporting a bill, you should be able to answer why you don't.
Yeah. Right. Well, like I said, you know, I want to stress again, I'm not trying to be disingenuous. I'm just trying to be clear. So apologies if I am being, you know, coming off as that. But I've never seen a Harvey bill that actually does that. Right. I want to.
I heard you when you said that.
Yes.
So is that I'm not going to answer then? Or
no, so
I asked, I would, you, like, if you would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would not vote for it. Right. If I were a member of, and I could pass a Harvey bill, I would not vote for it. Correct.
Sorry, did you say Congress there? I accidentally muted you, Ben. As you're a member of Congress?
I said a member of my state legislature.
Okay. Right? All right.
Yeah. Or Congress, whatever the case may be. I would not vote for it. Right. And I would say that's because it's an iniquitous decree. You know, okay. We actually do have the standard of, you know, you shall not codify iniquity, right? You know, Isaiah 10, Psalm 94.
Got it.
And like Proverbs 30, 31, you know, there are minimum standards where we can't just do whatever we want when it comes to politics. We can't just write into our laws that, you know, certain babies have to die, you know, under the cover
sure.
of our
no,
laws.
No, I appreciate the consistency there for sure. For me, it would just be like, man, I don't know how anybody and I'm not trying to impugn your motives, but when it comes down to it, like if we could literally save 99.9% of the babies and by not even sanctioning, but by indirectly saying we should just not kill babies with heartbeats. I don't know why anybody who wants to protect children would rather prefer us killing 99.9% of them.
Right. Well, again, that I've never seen anything like that. So I don't think that's a real world situation, but maybe I can, you know, return a question to you where if we
sure,
look at like
sure,
some,
yeah.
Isaiah 10, maybe we can start there.
Yeah.
If I flip to it. So it says, yeah, woe to those who decree iniquitous decrees mm-hmm. and the writers who keep writing oppression to turn aside the needy from justice and to rob the poor of my people of their rights. So mm-hmm. how do you interpret that text?
Yeah, so woe to the people that have the power to end abortion and they don't. I don't mm-hmm. In other words, you can't ignore the context of something, right? Like it's as if you're applying an ancient manuscript in an age where there was kings and monarchs that could just literally write decrees and end abort, like to take that and then assume that we actually have the power to end abortion. Therefore we can't ever support some type of bills that give some children protection when they're killing all of them, I think is taking the intention of that out of context.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm not seeing in this text necessarily, you know, woe to kings or absolute monarchs who decree iniquitous decrees, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, I'm
sure.
just trying to tease out what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, cards on the table. I'm
yeah, but I don't bear a sword either, right?
I mean, yeah.
We're taking the general principles of the context of which that's a hermeneutical principle is that you can't ignore the context of what's going on there, and then use some wooden literalism to try to put that in and say that I'm biblically enshrining this type of ideology and saying that I can't ever save any babies because I might violate this wooden, like we have to see that the intention is there, like those, like if you have the power to write the and actually accomplish those, then woe to you who don't. I don't think it's referring to somebody that this context in our democracy that where we don't have the power to write as a king to snap our fingers and have abortion be abolished. So I think it's in that sense a category. Or
okay, can I just jump in and yep. see if this clarifies it? I think we're back to what I said earlier about the affirming versus the restraining standard, because it sounds like you could correct me if I'm wrong, AJ, but if Ben brought up other verses of similar nature, mm-hmm. you might look at that and say, yeah, but in the context in which we live, some of these restrictions that help save lives, these are righteous things to do. These are righteous laws. They're not killing anyone. At least, and I know that doesn't apply to all the heartbeat bills, but ones hypothetically, or maybe in the actual world, maybe there are some that do. You would say, no, that is a righteous thing to do. With the power that we have, we should do this because we're restraining evil. Whereas I think Ben's looking, you're looking at it, Ben, and you're saying that, no, this isn't the perfect standard of God's justice. And because of that, we're affirming injustice. It sounds like it keeps coming back to that mm-hmm. issue in my mind.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So I would say, you know, so I'm a general equity theonomist, right? If you want to be precise with where I'm not sure where you stand, AJ, necessarily on that.
I'm the same. Yeah, I'm the same.
Yeah. So I would say that there is an abiding validity of the moral principles of God's law that, you know, just because, you know, we're non-law under grace, that means we can just toss out the civil law. God does have good ideas on how to establish justice. I think, you know, Christians should look at Deuteronomy and, you know, those sorts of texts and say, you know, that is a reflection of the God who I love, his righteous character. And I want those similar laws or, you know, applied to my context, you know, in order to love my neighbor as myself and protect them and restrain evil and all sorts of things. So I would say texts like this actually show us how to go about abolishing abortion or establishing justice, where, you know, this is an example of something not to do, right? Where you do not, you know, establish injustice, you know, you do not decree iniquitous decrees. And it says, whoa, so that's judgment language. So I would not expect God to, you know, to bless an effort that, you know, goes about doing something like that. And maybe I'm inconsistent with how I'm applying it. You know, I'm willing to acknowledge that and to be proven wrong. But, you know, I would like to know how you're at least attempting to obey it.
Yeah, totally. No, I mean, I'm just saying, I think there's other hermeneutical principles that apply there. So like, you know, woe to those who take innocent life, right? But if you're going to tell me that telling the Gestapo he can save five Jews means that I'm sanctioning the death of the other five, it's like, and then trying to say, use Exodus chapter 20, thou shalt not murder, as I'm somehow implicitly guilty of that. It would be I think a very bad exegesis.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think there are categories of implicit guilt for child sacrifice. Like in Leviticus 20, you know, those who close their eyes to child sacrifice. I'm sure you've read that passage, obviously, you know,
sure,
because you're very active in opposing child sacrifice and in rescuing the innocent. God warns in Leviticus 20, if you do not establish justice, if you do not hold back those who are bringing their children and pass them through the fire for Moloch, I'll oppose you too. Right. Sure. So I do think there is like a category for blood guilt and not in failing sin by omission, failing to establish justice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
So do you guys think coming down to like AJ, it seems like you're very much arguing political strategy. Like, what's the strategy we should use to do this? And Ben, I'm not saying you're not talking about political strategy, but it sounds like you're more idealistic about, like, you're talking in terms of law. And AJ, you're talking in terms of politics. That's at least what I'm hearing, that there's, I don't know if there's a disconnect because of that. And maybe what would tease that out is Oklahoma versus, where'd you say, Ben, are you in Pennsylvania? Do you live
Pennsylvania,
there?
Pennsylvania, yeah.
Oh, we're not that far from each other. Okay, so I'm in New York, which more hopeless than Pennsylvania on this issue. Like, I don't know if you each would look at different strategies for different places, because in a place like Oklahoma, it would seem, you've had Republican majorities for how many years that say they're going to end abortion and then they don't do it. And it's just like, guys, do it. Right. Like, I think everyone worth their salt would be like, abolish it now in Oklahoma. You guys all say this, but then in place like Pennsylvania or even more so in New York, you don't have the political will to be able to secure that kind of a thing. And so, I don't know if that would be acceptable more to you, Ben. It sounds like you're in Pennsylvania already thinking through this. Would you see different strategies in different places?
Yeah. So no. So I would say the abolitionism and that sort of thing does still apply in a place like California or New York where, well, here's why. So like, if you look at, William Wilberforce with abolishing the slave trade, you know, it took him decades to do this, but he held to the same standard and, you know, he learned on his deathbed that his bill had passed. Meanwhile, you had people, you know, trying to regulate how big the slave ships were and things of that nature, where he was saying, no, this is what we need to do. We need to hold up this righteous standard and demand, you know, everybody else needs to move to my position, right? Assume the center, so to speak, which Christians have every right to do because, you know, God is the ruler of this world. This is his world. You know, that is the actual center is whatever he says. So if I were in a place like California, where even like an incremental measure is not going to pass, if you want to speak prudentially, I wouldn't even waste my time trying to do that. I would just start laying the groundwork for, you know, maybe in 20, 30 years, my kids will take up this work, but I'm going to start calling Gavin Newsom to repentance and, you know, Robert Bonta, the Attorney General, to repentance on this matter and saying, what you need to do is establish justice for the preborn, treat them as the human beings that they are, and then, you know, let them decide the increments. Dusty Devers was saying that recently. If there has to be increments, let it be on somebody else's conscience and let them justify that before God. So maybe, you know, in 10 years, you know, God blesses your labors and, you know, they pass you know, a Born Alive Act or something, like very preliminary. You know, don't be the person who was calling that whole time for the Born Alive Act. Be the person who was calling for complete abolition of abortion.
AG, I'd be curious, like, in a state that's red, like Oklahoma or maybe Idaho, where they have majorities and a governor that's, you know, say they're all pro-life, they want to end abortion on some level, and they don't do it. Mm-hmm. Would you then, if you were in the legislature, vote for a halfway measure? Or and maybe that's a bad way to put it, but no. That I'm trying to frame it the best way I can. Would you vote for like a heartbeat bill or something? Or would you demand, hey, we're in a place where everyone agrees that we should end it, end it?
Absolutely. No, I like, that's why I said there's actually practical, probably very little difference between Ben and I. I mean, I've supported equal protection bills in, like, honestly, I've supported every, there's, hasn't been an equal protection bill I haven't supported. I think it's an amazing thing to try to do, even in blue states, like, because you're preaching the gospel while you're doing it. Like, you're holding the standard and saying, all of you are in sin, like, repent, do justice. Like, I think there's a huge role in every one of these three spheres of God's kingdom to be preaching the gospel and calling forth consistency. However, I don't, when it comes to, you know, one of those spheres, actually providing protection and justice, I just don't, I want to end the bloodshed. And so if I have an opportunity to save some children, I'll do that. And, but to be, answer your question specifically, like, we're working in Idaho right now to try to not only defeat this abortion amendment that's coming in 2026, but then to establish an equal protection bill. I would love to get behind that. I think we need to rally the church behind that cause. So no, like Florida, Oklahoma, Louisiana, I think it's absolute treachery that has happened. And I have the entire time have been calling out, like, to my own peril. I mean, I without going into the details, there's been organizations that I'm no longer with because of my voice in resisting the political and moral compromise of the pro-life establishment.
Absolutely. Can I bring this into a different area, and then we can get back to abortion? But I just thought this would be a great kind of thought experiment. I'm assuming that you both think pornography is wrong and that no one should view it. And I know Ben, because you've been vocal about this on Twitter, you think it should just be banned. The government should ban it. AJ, I don't know. Do you think the government should ban pornography?
100%. However, okay. I would support, like if somebody said we should had a bill to ban child pornography, if it, you know, in some instance that they had some loophole, I wouldn't say that just because I have I'm supporting a bill that bans child pornography, that means I'm okay with the other forms of pornography. And actually that might be the crux of our debate. I would like to kind of maybe tease that out and figure out, is it the terminology, Ben, that you guys are resisting? Or, like, so in other words, if I just had a heartbeat bill that didn't say you can kill babies without heartbeats, but just a bill that said, we are protecting babies with heartbeats and you mm-hmm. can't kill babies with heartbeats. Are you saying it's iniquitous because it implicitly sanctions injustice?
Yeah. I don't know if it implicitly does. Like I'm saying, you know, there are statutes that, like, they're, you know, components of these bills that clarify when you can still kill babies. Right.
But there's others that don't. So that's what I'm asking is, like, if I crafted a piece of legislation that's been done that didn't sanction in the language any killing of any human being, but just saying which human beings we can protect, would you support those?
Yeah. So in that case, what you're doing is you could be pushing for actual abolition, but you're choosing not to. You're making the political actors, the lawmakers, the lobbyists are making a calculated decision to not push for full abolition. So mm-hmm. what I would do in a situation like that, instead of pushing for the heartbeat bill, you know, I would say, let's call for abolition. And then maybe they come back and say, well, let's do the heartbeat bill instead. And that'd be frustrating. But at least, again, like, it's not on my conscience. It's not, you know, that's not, you know, it's not my guilt that I'm incurring.
Totally. And I completely agree with you there. Like, I don't I don't advise anybody start with the heartbeat bill for these reasons. I mean, like even in a place like it generally, and this is why I say that we generally agree in 99% of the cases, most likely, is because if you can get a heartbeat bill, you could probably get a life at conception bill, right? So I would try to, and I mean, this happened, I believe, in Georgia, where they were thinking, okay, let's put a, let's get a heartbeat bill in. And they said, okay, no, well, let's not do that. Let's fight for a life conception bill, because they know once it goes to the House and then the Senate, they're going to add that. And that what they ended up happening was a heartbeat bill at the end of the day. But if they had started with a heartbeat bill, they probably would have had like a 15-week bill or something totally egregious. And so I agree practically with you, but I guess I'm just trying to find, I'm trying to like find out what is the principle here? Like, is it that you're outright explicitly sanctioning injustice, or what if there was some type of bill that actually criminalized abortion but of certain image bearers of God without implicitly sanctioning the death of others, if that. And I don't mean to put a hypothetical. I'm just trying to
give you the pornography example to see. Yeah, you answered it kind of like you would support a law to outlaw, to censor children from viewing pornography. Which there are laws in the books now in some states where internet providers cannot, you know, children cannot access pornography if they're not a certain age or something like that. So
okay, I thought that, you meant like banning.
I
child
thought that was
porn.
A parallel. Okay. But Ben, would you like reject that bill? Because it sounds like AJ, you already said you would support a bill like that if, I don't want to put words in your mouth. You know, AJ. And
Ben. I would.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I would. You know, I guess this is analogous to the heartbeat issue, to some extent. But
that's why I wanted to bring it up.
Yes. Yeah. But I would go to those politicians and say, you know, why not go for the whole thing, right? Why not just say let's ban porn, and then if they insist on doing just the child thing. You know, it's legitimately not my fault, right? But I would keep pushing for the standard, you know.
But would you vote for it is the question that I'm asking. Like, would you, if it was like there was one vote they needed to get it passed and they can't get it passed without that vote, AJ would vote for it. Would you vote for it, Ben? Or would it go back to the status quo of porn's just legal, you know, in all cases?
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, pornography is not as, I suppose, as clear as the abortion issue where it's literally baby murder. I'd have to, I don't know. I have to think about
clear
that.
Clear in scripture, right? Like that it would be lusting. It would be coveting another person's
exploiting
wife in some
people.
Cases. Yeah.
Yeah. It's sinful. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, again, this is a hypothetical and you're putting all the pressure on like one guy. You know, if I'm in Oklahoma and I'm a lawmaker in Oklahoma and everybody else is voting for it, I would abstain or, you know, to make a statement perhaps. I'm not sure I would, you know, I legitimately don't know. But when it comes to like abortion, child sacrifice, which is the topic of this debate or this conversation, whatever you want to call it, I would say, you know, I'm not going to vote for an iniquitous decree. I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah. And I wonder if we picked other hypotheticals, if that would even tease it out more. Because there's a lot, God laid down many laws, right? Murder is just one, but it's an important one. But if we were absolutist in everything or pragmatic in everything, I'll start with you, AJ, I guess, and then I'll let you guys continue the banter. I'm sorry for imposing myself here. I kind of couldn't help myself. It's my show, right? So,
AJ, how dare you speak up in your own show, John?
I know, and I'm catching myself and realizing that I shouldn't be interfering this much. But AJ, you know, if we were just pragmatic on everything or practical and like, hey, what do the people want? What can we get away with while still maintaining our seats and getting elected the next year? Wouldn't that be a race to the bottom?
100%. No, I mean, it's funny because
I keep thinking I'm going to get you and then I don't.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I've been, if you go on my Instagram, I've been so vocal about Trump because it bugs the crap out of me that every pro-life leader is totally kissing his feet right now while he sells our entire pro-life party out to like the Democrats. And so I think we need to push for the standard, But it, for me, it's just, it comes down to like, is this really all we can get? Like, is this really all that I can do to protect every single child? Because to be honest with you, like blood guiltiness, like it's, I mean, you mentioned it before, Ben, but blood guiltiness, the only thing that removes blood guiltiness is bloodshed. I mean, and I hate to say that, but it's just true. Like even in Genesis 9, it says, like, if you willfully spill men's blood by man, your blood will be spilled. And so this idea that we're establishing justice by instituting heartbeat bills is just ridiculous. Like locking an image, like thinking that we did justice by locking an image bearer of God up in cage for 10 years and calling that, but washing our hands and saying we actually did what was just, to me is silly. So if you're going to, if a heartbeat bill that doesn't explicitly sanction the taking of some, of an image bearer of God without a heartbeat, like if it just says, let's save these bills, if that is implicitly unjust, then an equal protection bill is implicitly unjust because it sanctions egregious crimes that God has never established and actually sanctions injustice against people who are breaking God's law in killing human beings. So that's why I've always said it's not that unrighteous incrementalism is unjust. It's that it's inevitable.
Okay, I'll ask the question to Ben then, too, from the flip side. If we were idealistic on everything to the point that, you know, there's never any kind of wiggle room, compromise, it's got to be exactly what God has laid down in his law, would we be able to make progress in areas like this? But also that could extend out to areas like pornography and the sanctity of marriage and other moral issues. Like, shouldn't there be some momentum or some ability to take a step and then take another step to get to where we are, or if there is, how would that look?
Yeah. So I would reject the premise that, you know, you're calling it idealism and all these sorts of things and saying,
I don't know what to call it.
What's that?
I said, I don't know what to call it. You use whatever word you want.
I'm just saying, you know, that's a term that, you know, is being employed, but I'm not trying to be idealistic as in, you know, I'm a 19-year-old libertarian, you know, with a fedora saying, you know, this is what it has to be and no real world experience. I'm saying this is actually how you do politics. You know, politics is not about compromises, it's about power. It's about, mm-hmm. you know, making the politicians do what you want them to do with a limited set of resources, with a limited voting block. You know, and I think you'd agree with this, John, that all you really need is a small and committed minority. You know, that's how the alphabet mafia has taken over this country in a very short period of time. So, you know, and I know you would also reject that, you know, we need this 51%, you know, regenerate, you know, majority to get anything done. But, you know, I think if Christians legitimately do apply strategic pressure in the proper ways with a righteous standard, then eventually we'll start seeing movement in the right direction instead of the opposite. So I think it maybe just be a different approach to politics where you don't really make friends with politicians necessarily. You make them do what you want, you know, by applying money, by applying votes, whatever the case may be, to threaten their power if they cross you. I know that there's been abolition groups who, you know, when there's like a committee chair who blocks their bill, they channel money into putting up billboards in his district to get him, you know, get another primary opponent elected instead. You know, that's the sort of thing I'd like to see. And, you know, with AJ, I know that he agrees with everything I just said. You know, that's what you want to ideally do. You know, if he's putting forth like 60% of the efforts to that and then 40% toward like some heartbeat bill in California, I want him to put, you know, that 40% toward helping me do the other 60%, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've gone about an hour now, and I want to be mindful of your time. I know we could probably talk about this forever, and I should probably get to some questions. So for $5, Earl Starbuck asks, given that most abortions are going to be done with the abortion pill and abortifacient birth control, should we focus attention on banning those? AJ and then Ben.
Yeah, it's going to be tricky to do it, though. it's weird because everybody's saying how abortion is returned to the states and it's no longer a federal issue, but like literally were federally subsidizing abortion. And then also the federal government brought this. I mean, the FDA is the one who's behind the abortion pill and regulating that. So I definitely think, I mean, I would actually point to somebody like Mark Lee Dixon in Texas, because he's trying to use whatever means possible to, including private enforcement mechanisms, to try to ban abortion trafficking. So we need to make it a crime in the states that we can, and even a crime to crime both civilly and criminally to traffic any child across state lines to be either poisoned or even in state to either poison or dismember someone.
Yeah. Ben. Oh, I have you muted. Sorry, Ben. Go start over. No, it's my bad.
No worries. I think AJ and I are going to see eye to eye on the need for that, you know, making sure that abortion pills, abortifacients are dealt with. Because it is, you know, now it's pushing at 3/4 of the abortions that happen in this country, and abortion rates are increasing because of them. Now it's just more available. People know about them more post Roe. So that's why, you know, I call for abolition bills, is because, you know, if you're facing down, murder penalties because you're taking pills and ordering through the mail and killing your baby in the privacy of your own home. And then, you know, there's a text message, you know, record of you doing that, and there's sufficient evidence to convict you, then, you know, I think those are the sort of laws we can pass. And I think AJ and I would probably agree that most of the pro-life movement is not even thinking in those terms. They hardly even care. Like, yep. You know, and then now you have this situation where the average pro-life voter, and truly a Christian who has good intentions, is looking at, you know, the abortion mill in their state closing down. They're celebrating, thinking that abortion's ending, when really it's actually increasing, but it's just not seen as much.
And then we have a question for you, AJ. Would the White Rose Resistance stance be that the GOP, who kill bills to abolish abortion, should be excluded from the table of communion? Why or why not?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
I think maybe it was GOP senators, because he didn't have the word in there, or
yeah, you know,
politicians who kill abortion. To ban abortion.
I mean, if I was a pastor of somebody that actively, like if Mike Johnson was in my congregation, man, dude, that would be tough, dude. I would have a few words to say, not only in abortion, I would have a few words to say to him in a lot of regards. But yeah, I don't think there aren't moral principles that he can make publicly that wouldn't apply to his life as a member of the body of Christ. And so if he's actively resisting abortion bills, I would say that, yeah, we'd have at least a conversation. I wouldn't be very careful about excommunicating somebody, especially for like secondary or tertiary issues in like biblical strategy towards ending political means. But we would at least have some type of disciplinary conversation if he's actually doing things to prohibit abortion from being abolished.
I apologize, Ben. Most of these questions that are coming in are for AJ. I'll ask you one though. This is for you, I guess, exclusively. Let's do this one. Is violence ever justified to protect the unborn? I think that one actually is for you, Ben. So
I want to get charged with a crime for giving an actual
or a war maybe or something to end it. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, what I would want to happen is the state using violence to end abortion, right? Where God has given the sword to the civil magistrates to execute justice. That's Romans 13. That's not, you know, some Old Testament, you know, possibly, you know, are we talking about, some kind of monarch doing this? No, this is, you know, Romans 13, you know, all of Christians for the past 2,000 years have applied that to any civil government they're in, you know, where if God puts you into a seat of civil power, you have the duty to whatever degree of power you have to actually wield that sword for justice's sake, whether you're, you know, the governor of a state, whether you're a lawmaker, whatever the case may be. So that's the kind of violence I support to end abortion, is the death penalty for people who willfully murder babies. And Ecclesiastes 8:11 says that, you know, that's a deterrent for future criminals to do the same. And like even AJ was saying, you know, at Genesis 9:6, where the blood guilt element is there, where there actually is blood for blood that's necessary. That's what God thinks about the death penalty. That's what Christians have historically thought.
Okay. This one's for both of you. babies murdered at fertilization and those murdered in the third trimester, is there a difference? Is one murder worse than the others? So AJ and then Ben.
No, they're equally wrong.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Equally wrong.
All right, that was easy.
Easiest question I had all night.
And I know it wasn't for me, but I don't think I differ from you guys. I think it's murder, but I would say it probably does take a certain level of callousness when you're in the third trimester and you, especially if you do have a heartbeat and you know it, and it looks like, there's sort of this extra layer of evil sometimes or a callousness, I guess. I don't know what else word to use to be able to do that, but yeah, obviously it's wrong, both cases. So we have this question, which prayers does God refuse to hear if we are not abolitionists? All of them? I don't know if I understand this question. Do you guys understand what this is asking?
This is like ideologuing.
Okay.
I think he's trying to say if you're an unrepentant sin, will God, God's merciful in cases like that. You know, people are sometimes blind to their sin, you know. I don't know. I'm not sure what he's exactly getting at, but I think
okay, we won't try.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's one question for Ben. What role do you believe the federal government has in regulating abortion, especially in view of your theonomical views? Room for federalism?
Yeah, certainly federalism is the preferred outcome. You know, just like we have with murder law, you know, murder law is done at the state level, and I think that should be the case for abortion too. You know, but there is still, you know, the doctrine of lesser magistrates and, you know, even with greater magistrates with greater power can step in when the lesser magistrates are failing to do their duty and establish justice. And we do have explicit federal permission to do that with the 14th Amendment, you know, guaranteeing that the states have equal rights. But again, I'd rather see all 50 states abolish abortion, establish correct penalties for that. You know, that's an absolute last resort for me.
Can I respond to that real quick?
Sure.
I'm curious because if that's true, I wonder why the state thing doesn't come into view here with this whole incremental debate. Because if I'm voting on a bill to end abortion in a state, I could be tacitly that you could say that I'm tacitly agreeing to the reality that human rights are up to debate and that I could literally determine who lives and who dies by a popular vote. And so, you could say then that, yeah, I just kind of wonder like why this incremental thing, when it comes to only the states themselves, in reference to the federal government now being not applying the 14th Amendment immediately and ending up abortion in all 50 states.
Yeah. So I think it depends on who you are, right? So if you're a lawmaker in Pennsylvania or the government of Pennsylvania, you have zero power over, you know, what happens in Ohio or New York. All you can do is abolish abortion in your realm, you know, in the same way that the U.S. does not have any power to go, unless you really wanted to, you know, employ our military or whatever, but I don't think anybody's calling for that, to go to Kenya or to China and end abortion there. But I think in the current state, you know, if I've been talking to my congressman, I would say you need to put forward an equal protection bill and you need to abolish abortion. Right. So like when Live Action had their North Star campaign a couple of years ago, I think most abolitionists were pointing out, you have that clause in there saying that women are exempt from this. And, you know, and that was, so abolitionists certainly speak to the federal level as well. And, you know, but again, I'd rather see states do it because I do think in our system, the states are the ones who handle murder law, and I'd prefer to see it there.
But I guess my argument was a little different though. My argument was if a heartbeat bill sanctions the death of children without heartbeats, then wouldn't simply voting on who lives and who dies indirectly sanction the notion that that human beings don't have equal inalienable rights?
Follow. So you're saying, could you rephrase it perhaps?
Sure. So like if a heartbeat bill, me saying I can protect baby, we should protect babies with heartbeats. If a heartbeat bill is evil because it implicitly sanctions the murder of children without heartbeats, then you could make the case that even showing up to vote on somebody's rights to live and die is perpetuating the notion and giving credence to an unjust law to begin with, that says an iniquitous decree that says that we can determine by popular vote who lives and who dies.
I don't know about that. I mean, you know, our system is based on voting, right? Where the government has the duty to protect the rights that the people already have, right? So the government's not assigning rights to people when they vote for or against certain bills. They're at least ideally securing rights that they already have. So whether it's the Second Amendment, whether it's the First Amendment, that are enshrining those rights, or in this case, the right to life. Just because I'm an abolitionist Christian lawmaker who's showing up to my state legislature to vote against a heartbeat bill or for an abolition bill, I'm misunderstanding, but
Let me help you there, because they are actually, when you say that a state legislature has the right to deprive inalienable rights for somebody, therefore vote to take them away, then you're implicitly legitimizing the abolitionists used to oppose Roe v. Wade because it was a legal fiction in part and not outright ending it. So you could say that even showing up to vote would be giving credence to this idea that human rights are to be voted on, which is unconstitutional.
Well, no, I don't know if I buy that, because again, you're showing up to enshrine rights by virtue of law that the people already have. That's the whole point of our system, right? So we need, you know,
but they don't have them if you can take them away.
Inalienably, they have their rights, but the government has to determine how to protect those rights they already have. So that is going to involve votes at some level. I'm not sure.
Rights by any one stretch of the imagination if you can literally vote them away. Like, we can't, if the government, if the state legislature tomorrow decided that we can kill 25-year-olds that are Irish, you know, no one would pretend that's legitimate, because the right to life isn't to be voted on. So if your perspective fundamentally is participating in this is implicitly taking rights away, in the case of the heartbeat bill, then I don't see why you wouldn't take the same logic and apply them to voting in general or voting at the state level, because you're legitimizing a system that is unconstitutionally saying that we should be able to take your rights away that are inalienable and are protected on the 14th Amendment and the Declaration of Independence by a popular vote.
Yeah. Well, in a situation like that, if I'm showing up to vote, whether I'm a citizen casting my ballot in November in the primaries or a state lawmaker, you know, I have, you know, as a lot, assume we're talking about a lawmaker here, you know, swearing an oath to the Constitution, right? And as a Christian, you know, having an allegiance to the higher law of God, right? Saying, you know, I have a duty to use my vote. I have one vote representing my people to do justice and to uphold the Constitution, all these things. I would have a positive duty to show up and vote against it, right? That's the power that I have in this system. So I'm.
But that's an incremental argument. That's an incremental argument. Right. It is, because if it's unjust for you to pretend like we can take rights away, then you're saying the opposite is that people die. Therefore, we need to show up, because the opposite would mean that we're sanctioning their death. And I'm simply saying that's begging the question. If your perspective is that that it's implicitly evil by supporting something that is unjust.
Yeah, well, incremental or immediatism is not assuming that you have all power, right? I'm not omniscient. I don't have every vote in Pennsylvania, right? I can't just, like, you know, mind control all my lawmakers and make them vote how I want. Suppose I'm in the Pennsylvania State House, I have one vote. Or if I'm the governor, you know, I have executive orders, whatever the case may be. You know, within the bounds of your actual power that you have as an individual, as a lawmaker, whatever, then, you know, you're doing your full duty before God, right? If you're, that's really what it's getting at. It's not,
I don't know how that's germane to my argument, but we can move on.
Okay. We're actually now almost an hour and 20 minutes in. So if you guys, you know, just let me know if you need to go. I don't really want to go too much longer. We do have a lot of questions coming in and comments, more comments than questions. There's quite the fight going on in the chat group here.
Would expect all right. Less.
Ben, men's conscience is clean because he didn't try to save children incrementally. How many die in those 30 years? I think AJ's conscience is clean because he's actually doing something. I don't know if that's a dig at you, Ben. I'm not sure if that's it has question marks. So I assumed it was a question. But I guess that was the only question was how many die in those 30 years. So maybe defend yourself. You're obviously doing things to try to end abortion. And so I think he's asking what success though, have you had?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So first of all, I'm 24, I'm not 30. So, but in any case, yeah, over the past 50 years, it's been incrementalism under which all these babies have been dying. It has not been immediatism, right? Every time that immediatism is even tried, it's the incrementalists who undercut them. Right. So in all these states that, you know, AJ and I are agreeing on, like Arizona, Oklahoma, Florida, it's always the incrementalist, you know, Republican committee chairs or whatever who come in and undercut all the efforts and the lobbyists and so forth who are funded by National Right to Life. So it's not the abolitionists who are killing, who are stopping any babies from dying or who are causing any babies to die. It's those who are literally passing laws saying we need to keep letting babies die.
Did you say something, AJ?
Yeah. Can I respond to that real quick?
Yeah.
This idea that incrementalism is why babies are dying is so historically reductionistic, I would say. I mean, because I could easily say that, especially since a equal protection bill, there's only one that I'm aware of that's ever even made it out of committee hearing, and you guys have been trying for 10 years. So, I mean, I'm trying to be established decorum here, but like I could just as easily say when you have every power to put forth bills in the state legislature also, but now you can blame it on the pro-choice lobby or pro-life lobby all you want, but you're conceding the point that we need cultural reformation and including in the GOP, which I agree with. So just to say that the reason why babies are dying is because of incremental policies is just silly in my opinion.
I'll let Ben respond to that.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that's every case, obviously, you know, where there's hardly any pro-life presence that's not the case. Like California, that's not the case, but it's like, I'm talking most about red states and purple states. But if you look at who's actually causing the cultural reformation within the GOP, you know, who's getting all the GOP talking heads, conservative talking heads, podcast hosts talking about abortion in a new light, it's the abolitionists, it's the immediatists. You know, you have like Bradley Pierce and Ali Bastucky and, you know, Dusty Devers on Steve Dace. And, you know, those are the people who are actually, you know, pushing the ball forward on abortion is the people who are saying, you know, I'm going to go to what I actually want, which is the abolition of abortion. And everybody else has to come to where I am, you know, assuming the center again. So I would reject the idea again that like, you know, it's not that abolitionists are completely ineffective. You know, we're having this conversation because abolitionists have been effective at shifting paradigms over the past 10 years.
Okay, well, we do have more questions coming in. A lot of them are about IVF. I really don't want to get on to that topic when we're over an hour and 20 minutes in. But I think AJ started, so I'll let AJ, you can have a statement if you want to put a cap on this, and then Ben, why don't you end and put a cap on it and give your final remark.
Yeah, I guess I'll just summarize what my argument is all over again. It's not that unrighteous incrementalism is the case. It's that it's inevitable. It's not that it's unjust. It's inevitable. That anytime you try to end a political evil, you're going to be indirectly sanctioning some other type of evil almost all the time in an evil age. And so I think the difference here is a difference between philosophical political purity Getting your hands dirty and dealing with an unjust system, I would say that you can choose not to engage in the unjust system, but at the end of the day, it's just a form of practical pietism, because if you don't engage because it's too dirty, or if you don't engage because it's unjust, and doing so would elicit some type of implicit injustice, you won't engage at all.
All right, yeah. Ben.
Absolutely. So yeah, just to restate my initial point, I'm not denying the reality of increments, but I'm opposing incrementalism, right? Where you're pursuing change by degrees instead of acknowledging the inevitability of change by degrees, where, and I think probably the most important point in all this is, you know, are we doing this as Christians, right? I've tried to bring at least some degree of scripture into this discussion, but I'm confident that I'm at least striving to, you know, oppose abortion in a way that God would sanction and would bless. And maybe I'm inconsistent and I'm willing to, you know, deal with the hypotheticals and, maybe I shouldn't have called for the Arizona law. I don't know. But at least I'm attempting to obey, you know, the clear word of God on this issue, where, and I think that's what I respect so much about abolitionism, why it's so compelling to so many Christians, is because it is looking at how does God treat sin? God says end sin immediately, right? And I was making the point earlier today, we do this in our individual lives. We don't cut down when we watch porn, you know, from 5 weeks, 5 times per week to 2 times per week. We just try by God's grace to end it all and then see what happens. And maybe we fall, maybe we don't. Or when a missionary enters a new culture and, you know, he doesn't try to convince, all the polytheists of monotheism. He starts preaching, the Trinity. He starts preaching, the life, death, burial, resurrection of Christ. So in every other domain, we're treating sin immediately. We're trying, whether it's corporate or individual, and we're using God's word to do so. And for whatever reason, we've been duped as Christians in the United States to not do that on the abortion issue when it comes to politics. And if we have more time, I'd love to pursue, you know, AJ was mentioning the political, but maybe I've overstayed, you know, my welcome in this question.
Welcome.
But forgive me for doing that. But, you know, this is all, essentially what I'm being driven by is, at least attempting to be driven by, is the word of God and trying to honor the Lord Jesus Christ, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, in doing this.
Amen. Yeah, so I appreciate both of you guys, and this has been respectful and informative, I think. I would say that in the comments section, I think it leans abolitionists, the people who are asking questions and making statements and stuff, but we do have a healthy mix here. And if people want to go find out more about Ben, where can they go?
You can go to republicsentinel.com, and then you can go to my Twitter, which is at Ben Zeisloft.
And AJ.
Yeah, you can go to Twitter. I just started the Twitter thing, but AJ Hurley Life on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, AJ Hurley. And thanks so much, Ben, for this has been awesome and very, very respectful, which is something that doesn't often happen. So I'm so thankful that I think we proved that we can be brothers and disagree on things, and we're all fighting for the same thing at the end of the day.
Awesome. All right. Well, God bless, guys. Have a good night. Look forward to talking to you more in the future.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate it.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time, from an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.